What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th. So act now, and thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily, where we try to make some sense of everything that's going on around us in the world today. I'm David Rothkopf. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Chris Cottmore. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler, how are you, Riley?
Pretty good.
Why don't we start with you today, Riley?
So NATO is considering a new strategy to offer Ukraine more stable military support, as announced by NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. The proposed approach aims to shift from kind of this more spontaneous, off-the-cuff support and voluntary contributions to more enduring commitments by the alliance. This comes as Ukraine has also lowered its conscription age from 27 to 25, clearly showing that they are still in need of aid. And the initiative would consolidate the efforts of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group. It would consolidate under NATO's leadership rather than U.S. European command. So a big effort to just kind of make sure that this aid is more stable over the long term, which I think can only be positive.
Yeah, the effort calls for $100 billion in aid over 5 years. I think you can see it as an effort to Trump-proof, MAGA-proof, GOP-proof aid flows to Ukraine, as Europeans realize that so long as Republicans control the House, and worse, if Republicans control the entire U.S. government, we would not be the kind of dependable ally we have been under Joe Biden for Ukraine or for NATO. And I think this is just one of several steps we can predict will happen as NATO seeks to make sure that a wrong turn in the political weather here in the United States does not have devastating security consequences for Europe. Chris?
Taiwan experienced its most significant earthquake in over 25 years, with a 7.2 magnitude quake striking off the east coast of Taiwan, resulting in 9 deaths, over 800 injuries, and 50 people missing en route to the Taroko Gorge National Park. The tremor, causing structural damage and landslides, prompted a tsunami warning in southern Japan and the Philippines, which was later lifted. President-elect has said that rescue efforts are a top priority, and the quake's impact was felt across the region, including in the southeastern province of China and even Shanghai. Taiwan's major industries, including semiconductor manufacturing, were affected, though most services and power supplies have been restored.
Yeah, Taiwan is the world's biggest supplier of semiconductors. It supplies something like 2/3 of all the world's semiconductors. Most of the hyper-sophisticated semiconductors in the world, little chips that make everything go. And I think people were watching extremely closely and with a lot of concern as its biggest semiconductor factories were briefly shut down by this quake. There has long been a concern among national security planners, economic planners, and others that a big quake or a big typhoon or a war could interrupt the flow of these semiconductors, which essentially the world needs for the economy to work. It's one of the reasons that the Biden administration has invested heavily in creating semiconductor manufacturing capability in the United States. The world is so dependent on those. It's almost analogous to the world once being dependent on oil. If those flows stop, the economy stop. It would be absolutely devastating. It's not to say that the consequences of this quake, which is Chris says is the worst in 25 years, were insignificant. Images show buildings destroyed, highways destroyed, and an island off the coast of Taiwan having sustained very heavy damage. It is a reminder of the fragility of the world economy and its vulnerability to natural disasters as well as man-made disasters. Riley?
So President Biden and President Xi Jinping engaged in a conversation yesterday, which is a continuation of diplomatic efforts to try and find some common ground amidst strained relations. It built on agreements from a November summit to improve bilateral relations and military communications, but did not result in immediate policy changes this time. As part of the next stage of this, Treasury Secretary Yellen will be visiting Beijing this week, and then there's already on the books a visit scheduled for the Secretary of State. So, you know, again, not concrete results here, but the fact that dialogue is even taking place is a good step.
Well, yeah. I mean, the reality is that the readout on the meetings from both sides was constructive. The Chinese specifically said that the meeting suggests that the relationship is becoming a bit more normalized and stable. That's super important. The United States and China have deeply interconnected economies, and there are no major issues in the world that will get resolved without the cooperation of the United States and China. So one step away from Cold War, one step towards the kind of dialogue on which we all depend, that's a good thing. And it happens in small ways. And indeed, sometimes calls like this are most consequential for the headlines they don't produce. You know, if they don't make big headlines because of conflict, but instead make small ones because diplomats and presidents are doing their job listening to one another. Chris?
The Biden administration is seeking congressional approval for an $18 billion sale of F-15 fighter jets to Israel amid ongoing conflicts in Gaza, though these jets would not be delivered for 5 years. The funding includes arms sales, munitions, training, and support. Expedited U.S. arms shipments to Israel have followed recent conflicts. This sale aims at addressing long-term regional threats from Hezbollah, Iran, and others. I got to say, I'm a little confused about this in terms of, you know, why amid all of the rhetoric, you know, the backlash against the Biden administration with regard to Israel, isn't this an opportunity for them to say, you know, no more funding until, you know, we make some progress on a ceasefire agreement? Or does that leave the door open for other players, more sort of seedy players, I suppose, on the diplomatic stage to provide the arms to Israel? I'm confused.
Well, I don't think, I think you're gentle in saying that you're confused. It's confusing. It's a missed opportunity, as you say. And some U.S. officials have been explicit about it. You know, in the wake of the strike by the Israelis on the World Central Kitchen convoy, which killed 7 people, some U.S. legislators said, okay, stop, enough, no more weapons, you know, until, you know, we have a ceasefire in Gaza, until we have an Israeli commitment to move forward towards a two-state solution. It is going to take that kind of leverage to produce those outcomes. And I have spoken in the past couple days to Israelis who are surprised and frankly a little bit disgusted with the U.S. administration not taking a tougher line with the Netanyahu team. Israelis recognize the dangers posed by Netanyahu and his extremist government. They would like to see somebody pressure them. And the only country in the world that can do that is the U.S. And when you say somebody else could step in, well, nobody else sells F-15s. You know, there's few other governments that offer the kind of sophisticated weaponry that the United States does. And the Israelis are deeply committed to U.S. weapons platforms. And so adjusting to another would not be good, whether it's French or whether it's Swedish or whether it's Russian or Chinese. And frankly, the Israelis couldn't embrace really the Russians or the Chinese for a variety of other reasons. So we have leverage and we're not using it. And it's time we started to use it. And that is only underscored by this most recent tragedy where the Israelis struck a convoy that had identified itself, that had its logos painted on it, that was spread out over the course of a mile and a half, and struck it three times. And now they say, well, that was a mistake. But aid flows are being cut off into Gaza as a result. Certain organizations are not moving forward. World Central Kitchen has pulled out. And that's going to lead to other deaths, suffering. And this is the kind of thing that the United States needs to recognize is the result of a bad policy of empowering a rogue Israeli administration. It doesn't say anything about the U.S.-Israel relationship. It's about the U.S. relationship with the Netanyahu government. Riley?
Well, an interesting dispute in the world of conservation between Germany and Botswana, as the president Masisi of Botswana has threatened to send 20,000 elephants to Germany in response to proposed stricter limits on importing hunting trophies. So this comes as Botswana is home to over a third of the world's elephant population, 130,000 elephants, and face challenges associated with that, such as property damage, crop destruction, and threats to human safety. They've previously relocated elephants to other African countries and are now threatening to do the same to Germany, given that Germany has imposed tighter restrictions on hunting trophies, which Botswana says is a crucial source of conservation funding and community support against poaching. So it's kind of an interesting angle of the conservation debate. I hadn't even heard of this debate before, so it's really interesting to me.
Yeah, they're not shipping 30,000 elephants to Germany, although I'd love to see that, and the movie about it would be hilarious. But the more serious issue underlying this is whether anybody, for any reason, should be taking, killing animals for trophies, for any reason. And the answer is they shouldn't be. The animals have not deserved that fate. Nature does not require us to thin out the herds, no matter what we say. And it's just a reprehensible pastime. I think in this particular case, stronger sanctions against that kind of behavior on the part of Germany makes sense, and is a good thing. No matter what the good intentions of the Botswana government are, it's time to move on from this barbaric practice. That's it for us today. Each and every day, we'll try to sum up what's going on in big stories in the world in 15 minutes or so that you can get a little bit of perspective. If you've got further questions, you can always reach out to us and you can listen to our other podcasts, which go into greater depth. Today is a Wednesday, so that means we've got our Mothership podcast, the original that started it all, Deep State Radio, coming a little bit later today. And of course, each and every day, we've got more like that on the issues that we cover. So come back again here, come back again there. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.